I have to go upstairs and record something again, so...
Quiet.
Do not...
smash anything.
And do not disturb.
Do not disturb.
Do not come into your room.
You're listening to Pandemic, a podcast from RTE News and Current Affairs on the COVID-19 crisis. I'm Colm O'Mungoyne, and each week I'll be talking to RTE's correspondents, reporters and others to bring you news, updates and analysis you can trust. We can guarantee you a high quality of information. Sound quality, on the other hand, might vary somewhat. The correspondents and I will be recording this in many cases on mobile devices from home, so please do bear with us. It's Friday, June 5th, and listener, this is the last of the daily Pandemic podcasts for now. We will be moving next week to a weekly podcast in the later part of the week, and it's a sign the virus has been greatly suppressed thanks to the bruising efforts people complying with the lockdown measures have made. But it is still with us. In the last 24 hours, 7 more deaths have been notified to the Department of Health, bringing the death toll to 1,670. 28 more cases have been confirmed, and the total now stands at 25,163. Globally, nearly 393,000 people have died with coronavirus, and 6.7 million infections of COVID-19 have been recorded. Later in this episode...
No herd immunity strategy in Sweden.
The Swedish Foreign Minister, Ann Linde. We'll hear from her speaking remotely at Dublin's Institute for International and European Affairs, and I got to throw a question to her on the issue of herd immunity. Also...
We couldn't really say anything because you were recording. We have to be... must be as quiet as we can.
The children in my house, who've been amongst some of the people who've shown great forbearance, break their silence. But first today, the government held a press conference with the Taoiseach, the Minister for Health, the Minister for Enterprise and the Chief Medical Officer to talk about the lifting of restrictions and moving into Phase 2 or Phase 2 plus, as we'll hear. The HSE also held a press conference and the Department of Health had their usual evening briefing, so our correspondents are nothing if not well briefed. As we go to the first of them now, Sinead Crowley.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thank you. Good. Interesting day all round.
Yeah, I'm sure. And a busy one at that. So they said at the beginning of this whole thing that they would be guided by performance in flattening the curve and that the data would dictate the lifting of the phases. So what numbers led them to go for a phase 2 plus? In this case, they're doing a bit of acceleration. So what do the numbers look like for them to make that decision?
They are. Well, I think what leapt out at me from the briefing this evening was 28 confirmed cases of COVID-19. That's a very low figure. I had a quick look back at the statistics, and other than the 10 that we saw this week, which we know was down because of a bank holiday, you'd actually have to go way back to March to see a figure of 28 or 27. So it is a big drop, and I suspect that is, you know, that type of confirmed cases is providing some reassurance that, as we know ourselves, you know, there are clusters or there are instances of infection in meat processing plants and so on, and we had the nursing home. So actually, when you take those areas out of it, then that's a very low amount of infection in the wider community. So clearly that is providing them with some reassurance, you know.
Okay, well, we'll get into a bit of detail on the do's and the don'ts, but seeing as you mentioned the meat processing plants, I was keeping an eye remotely on the briefing there in the Department of Health this evening, and it was one of the things you were asking a question about. So what were you asking and what did you find out?
That's right. Well, we also heard about it at the HSE briefing this morning, because clearly, there's over 1,000 cases diagnosed, and we got some more details about it at the HSE briefing this morning. First of all, that they had 100% contact tracing in the workplace, but 90% tracing in general with workers in meat processing plants, because there had been a worry yesterday. There'd been a mention of 60 to 70% contact tracing. But what we've heard now is that this is just one particular location in general. It's around 90%. Obviously, these, and in some cases, the workers maybe mightn't have access to a phone or aren't answering their phone. And essentially, the problem in some of these areas are that these might be people who speak fluent English. They mightn't be a group of people who would, you know, watch news bulletins or, I suppose, be across current affairs in that sense and the medical advice. They're also, in many cases, living together as well as working together. So there are particular challenges. So that was, again, mentioned at the briefing this evening, that these are challenges. However, it is up to the government to work with the plants, who are, of course, private companies as well, to try and work with those challenges as much as possible and contact people and provide locations for people to isolate as well if they are diagnosed. But interestingly, 77% male as you would expect, I suppose, given the type of work involved, but also over half of them are quite young, so it would be quite different to the general population as well, but again reflecting, I suppose, the demographic of people working in the plants. So they're clearly aware of it as an issue and looking at testing there as well as everywhere else.
Yeah, and I was watching Heather Humphreys, the Enterprise Minister, earlier at the briefing this afternoon. She was saying there'd been 1,000 inspections of workplaces done by the HSA, but she didn't have the breakdown and she didn't know what the infringements would be. So whenever we get that information, that'll be interesting as well. But the next thing I wanted to ask you was, cad the enemid fast the gun browsing? Browsing,
yes,
is
exactly.
Dead.
Yes, it's shopping, but not as we know it. And I don't know, or maybe they say there's different male and female shoppers might be different. Maybe men like to walk in, pick up a pair of shoes and walk out immediately and go home. And actually, I'd be quite that way inclined myself. But a lot of people don't like that. They like to browse. But people are being asked not to congregate, which is the word that is being used about shops. And Dr. Tony Houlihan was asked here at the briefing this evening. I mean, the opening of shops did seem to have been accelerated, because before today, we didn't think it would involve retail units in a shopping centre, for example. We thought it was going to be shops that open out onto the street, but now we found out today that most shops really are going to be open. But he said the reason for that was they had to look at the public safety, the public health guidelines, and that really the shops are going to be providing social distancing, ensuring social distancing, and then that it's also up to the customer to go in, not to congregate and to go home again. So this idea of a shopping centre as somewhere where you hang out will not be the case. You go in, you use it and you go home. So that, and that was actually a theme of the press conference here this evening, that really it's up to the individual. A lot of this is going to be up to the individual now. In a way, it was easier when nobody could go past 2 kilometres. You did what you were told. There wasn't anything else to do. But now that people are going to be out and about, travelling more or going around their county, it is going to be up to them to maintain the social distancing and to be careful. The chief medical officer was also asked about pubs and restaurants. And as you can imagine, when is a pub not a restaurant and when is a restaurant a pub is going
Indeed.
To be quite the topic.
Do you remember the sloppy meals that used to be served in nightclubs? Con carne and the chicken curry, you had to queue up with a ticket so that a nightclub could
Indeed.
Pose as a restaurant to extend its license. Are we going to return
Indeed.
To those heady days?
I aged myself disgracefully at the press conference by remembering that what very few of the other reporters did, except one of them said that it reminded them of their dads. But I remember it very well in places like, I think, CP's in Galway, in places where you would stop everything at about 12 o'clock for a plate of food.
Yeah.
So this
Nijinsky's
is not
in
going
Kildare
to be,
with people smoking
Indeed.
In the queue, you know. Anyway,
this is
here.
Not going to be the case. The chief medical officer very firmly said that 3 lads having a pint with a packet of peanuts does not constitute a meal. And so you can't say clearer than that. And he said, Irish people know what a restaurant is and they know what a pub is. So
right.
No, packet of peanuts does not constitute your dinner. That seems to be very much the case.
Okay, that's going to result, no doubt, in some interesting Jesuitical discussions about when is a meal not a meal. Oh, will we be getting back to the old Lenten discussion of collations versus meals? Anyway, I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole on that one. The last time we spoke, I think we were looking at summer camps, and playgrounds was another thing you were mentioning. There's some clarity on that, but also a little bit of a grey area as well.
Yes, some clarity. We need a little bit more. There is talk of playgrounds being opened, but supervised playgrounds. And I just see from another colleague reporting that Dublin City Council has said that it doesn't operate supervised playgrounds, so it's looking for further clarification. Taoiseach also said earlier that playgrounds and commercial amenities for children could reopen if they were supervised. So you would imagine that could be maybe play areas in established play outlets, but they'd have to be outside, you know what I mean? That area of supervision, clearly we need a bit more clarification on that. The summer camps come under sporting. It looks like they will go ahead initially for post-primary. And when I saw that, I was wondering why that was the case, but actually that's the case because we're still in June. Even though most of us think we're on summer holidays, of course technically primary school children should be in June now, so the summer camps are initially for post-primary, but one would hope it extend to primary. But it will involve just 15 children in a group, so again it looks like individual companies or individual groups are going to have to work out how that works. So
one Gaelic football team playing against itself, or indeed a rugby team playing against itself, or
From my knowledge of my minor knowledge of sport, but also my knowledge of the guidelines, like, contact isn't encouraged anyway, so I don't think you're going to have many teams playing against each other. It's more training, So that's why, for example, tennis was one of the first things back and golf was the first thing back. You know, the more non-contact, the better. I would imagine off the top of my head, if you were running a tennis camp that could accommodate 14 children, you would be first in the queue to open, you know. So there's going to have to be a lot of, I suppose, sensible action taken there as well.
The issue of retail, Sinead, sorry, just to return to it, staggered opening hours and allocated time for the over 70s as well. That sounds like there's a bit of management involved there.
That makes sense. The half 10 opening makes sense because they're also, of course, trying to reduce people on public transport. So the theory is that you don't want everyone travelling on public transport at the same time. So workers in one type of job would be on the public transport early. The retail workers then can head in, I presume, 9-ish to open up the shop. And then the shoppers don't head in until half 10. So it's all aimed at staggering people travelling in, you know, that there's not going to be huge crowds. I actually, listening to the radio earlier, heard about one shop owner, for example, who was talking about doing that and then maybe having private bookings for other customers later in the day. That was a boutique owner speaking on the news at one. So I suppose different shops will come in, you know, with different ideas. But again, it's to avoid crushes and to avoid crowds of people, and that's across society. And again, there's going to be an element of trust your own judgment as well. If you don't feel that it's a safe amenity in terms of crowds, you have to use your own judgment there as well.
Right. I'll be borrowing the clippers from the brother for quite some time to come.
Yeah, you will. There's no movement at the moment on hairdressers or what they're calling personal care services, nails and hair and so on. That's staying where it was. Again, I suppose it's all got to do with proximity and all got to do with safety, and it's not considered something that can come back yet. So we may be playing and we may be dressing in new clothes, but we're going to be unshorn for quite some time.
Unshorn and unwedded.
Yeah, we still don't really know what constitutes a big wedding or a small wedding. So that's something they have to look at as well. So still a few, I suppose. And again, we have to see how these phases proceed. Do you know what I mean? We talked about the roadmap, and now the roadmap itself has changed. Now, thankfully, it has changed in the right direction, as in they're after pulling things forward. But I suppose the big thing that the officials don't want is for things to have to go backwards at any stage, you know. So this is not nothing. This is, I think, living document. Isn't that the word they keep using about it? That we have to keep watching the numbers, keep watching how things going. And also, actually, at both press briefings today, at both the HSE and the Department of Health, mention was made that they do watch other countries as well, because Ireland has been in a happy position in one way, in that it came into this pandemic a little bit later than other countries, so it is able to watch other countries and see how they go and learn from their experiences. So yes, we do have more information now, but I think Minister Harris pointed out last night, just because the shop is open doesn't mean you have to go to it. You know, there's no need for everybody to rush out on Monday morning. It'll be taking things fairly handy for a while to see that we can proceed with this map and just keep going forward rather than having to ever take a backward step.
Yeah, cocooners, people over 70 visiting granny and granddad. There was even a question earlier at the government briefing as whether or not it's okay to hug your grandparents again. And Tony Hoolan said, well, I never said you can't, but then I don't know of any child with 2 meter long arms. So
yeah, it's the cocooners, you have different types of grandparents as well. Of course, you'd have some grandparents with some older people with different health issues and so on. So
some,
yes,
who
you
live
are
with the family, some who live exactly with their grandkids anyway, so that may not have arisen.
And so you can visit homes, certainly with people with particular health issues, face masks and gloves and so on was still recommended. You can now obviously visit relatives if they live in the same county as you, even, you know, particularly handy if you live in a very large county, you can go a long distance to see them, but you're not going to be staying overnight yet. Tony Hoolan was asked this evening if there could be sleepovers with a grandparent, and he said, look, they're not putting hours, they're not going to, you know, be that prescriptive in terms of time, but no, it's not a visit you'd be staying overnight at this stage. It is a visit, and it's an initial visit, and again, see how it goes.
Okay, well, we mentioned when is a bar a restaurant and all of that kind of a discussion, but when is a county? That'll be an interesting one. People can travel for, I think, 200 kilometres within the county of Cork, but they can only travel 20 kilometres into Kerry. So it's
exactly
the whole travel thing is may become a bit of a vexed issue, but nonetheless, we know now that we can travel 20 kilometres or anywhere
or
your own county, whichever is the greater distance.
Yeah, and I suppose it makes sense because you're looking at counties like Kerry and Waterford, for example, with very, very low incidences of COVID, you know, and So it would make sense that, and also people just live further apart, so they need to go maybe further than 20 kilometres just to see a friend, whereas typically in a city you might be able to just go for a walk and see somebody you know. So I suppose it does make sense. But yes, I've had several texts today from people asking if, for example, they live in Killiney, can they go to Bray for a walk? Well, they can because it's in 20 kilometres, but not because it's in the same county. So there you go, there's no claiming of places like Bray for Dublin, but as long as you're in 20 kilometres you're okay. But yeah, it will be an interesting dilemma for bigger and smaller counties. But again, I suppose it's showing that things are going in the right direction. It's giving people a little bit of freedom. It's up to now, you know, to see how that progresses and to see how people, I suppose, use that freedom and to keep an eye on the numbers on the while ahead.
Right. Finally, then, we were talking to two Catholic priests on yesterday's episode, and they were talking about funerals and, again, funerals of up to 25. You mentioned weddings there already, but they won't be fully open up, I think, places of worship until phase three.
Yeah, and the funerals, I mean, particularly important. It has been a desperately sad part of this pandemic, is not just people who've lost people due to COVID, but anybody who has lost somebody at this time has had to, you know, restrict the funerals to 10 people. And you've had, you know, families watching funerals take place on webcams and so on. A very unnatural situation for this country and a very difficult one. So there will be some relief, I suppose, that the number's going up a bit there, even though it's still so small. I think people are quite cognizant of the fact that you want to hug people at a funeral. You know, it's different to maintain social distancing. It's a very tricky issue. But no doubt the access to mass and to other religious services will be of some comfort to people as well, because, you know, this was a pandemic that just turned people's lives upside down. It's as simple as that. And the people who take comfort from that will hopefully look forward to more access to it, you know. But again, social distancing being the key word, you know, be sensible, the hygiene, as they call it, the etiquette, all of that will just become a part of every life and every part of life.
All right. Thanks, Sinead.
Okay, you're welcome.
All the best. Cheers. Good luck. So we heard some of what you can and some of what you can't look forward to in phase 2 plus. But what was the horse trading like between the government and the National Public Health Emergency Team in the lead up to this? I gave political correspondent Paul Cunningham a call to get a summary, and it was very summary.
Oh yeah.
Hey, how are you? There's the
ice. That's your ice cream man. It's triggered off the taste buds and I can nearly think of a 99 in my hand.
Well, there you go. The summer is not over. As was said at the government press briefing earlier, they are accordioning the phases, if that's the correct word to coin a phrase on this podcast. Tell us what's going on.
We hit
phase 2 plus today, and we'll only be getting to phase 4, and we'll be getting to it all sooner. So what are the mechanics of the phase acceleration?
Well, initially we were thinking, and sorry, I'm in the vaults of a building at the moment, so it sounds a bit echoey, but initially we were thinking that phase 2 would be the sort of incremental change, you know, softly, softly, slowly, slowly, be careful. And then around yesterday, Thursday evening, the Taoiseach had been in the Dáil and he was indicating that they were asking NPHET to bring forward some measures from phase 3 into phase 2. And that was the first alarm bell that something was happening more than we had expected. By last night, Simon Harris, the health minister, was suggesting, yeah, that these new measures would be focused on young people and old people, and because they had been the hardest hit through the restrictions of the pandemic. But by this morning, certainly it was clear that things had advanced and substantial change was happening, that the phases were being reduced. More things are going to happen sooner than we'd expected. The first thing we heard about was that it wasn't just going to be a 20 kilometre limit from your house. Suddenly you're going to be able to travel anywhere in your county. And you could see social media really beginning to buzz that if you happen to be from, say, County Cork, you could be driving around for an hour and a half and still not hit the border. Whereas if you happen to come from County Louth, well, you're in a little bit of disadvantage there. Because if you happen to be living close to a border of another county, you can drive 20 kilometres from your house. But if you happen to be from a small county, well then, tough luck, that's as far as you're going to go. So those types of details were beginning to emerge this morning, and then bang, the Taoiseach came out and made his announcement at around 2:15, and we got to see the whole range of changes that were happening. And effectively, the big announcement, as he said, was that summer was starting on June 29th as domestic tourism was going to get a shot in the arm.
They went to NPHET, but some of the questions that arose at the government press briefing, the questions from journalists afterwards was, well, who jumped on this? Was this economic pressure being put on NPHET, or was this Neffet's idea? Basically, who made the call?
Yeah, and that's always been a fascinating thing. Up to this point, there's been a harmony between the cabinet and Neffet on the approaches taken to public health advice and, by extension, what that means for government policy. And it was Sandra Hurley of our political unit who asked a question of both the Taoiseach and the Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Tony Houlihan, who heads up Neffet, about what had happened. And Dr. Tony Houlihan said that there was a 10-page analysis that Neffet had submitted to the Cabinet on foot of the Cabinet asking them questions about how they could speed up the roadmap for opening up our economy and society. And the Taoiseach had referenced that this was always a living document, so these types of things were likely to change. And he talked about, you know, evidential matters related to the pathway of the virus. He spoke about international practice, watching what other EU countries were doing. And he sort of paused there. And then Leo Varadkar intervened to say that, you know, it was great that the two of them were there announcing the same thing at the same time. And then he elaborated and opened up that there had been a difference of opinion, and that was over the key issue of shopping malls. That when it came to some suggestions from government, Neffet had expressed concern that if you opened up shopping malls at this moment, there would be too much of a likelihood that people would be congregating in closed areas, and that was a risk for the creating of COVID-19 clusters. And the government then engaged with Neffet on this, and what it did was introduce new rules for malls, and delayed the announcement by a week so that the malls would be able to introduce these additional safety measures, which would overcome the concern that Neffet had. So you got an insight into the dynamic of how a substantial change had happened, and also, one would imagine, how things are going to change into the future now that we've got a sort of a much shortened timeline.
We also got a bit of an indication, or not a bit of an indication, we got a clear indication as to how long the pandemic unemployment payment was going to be extended for. In that, phase five lives on, because the phasing out of that has been pushed out until August, is it? What was the rationale for that?
Well, what we learned, we had effectively had two announcements. The cabinet meeting met at 10, concluded around 12, and then the Minister for Finance, Pascal Donoghue, and Regina Doherty, the Social Welfare Minister, came out and spoke to us. And what they explained was that, as we'd anticipated, COVID-19 payments were going to be rolled over, not for a matter of weeks, but a matter of months. So that meant it was going to roll over into the end of August. However, from June the 29th, there was going to be a change. And we knew this was likely to affect part-time workers, but it didn't hinge on that. It hinged on the amount of money you'd earned. If it was the case, and there's not, and there will be a few people crying about this as well, if that was the case, if you earned over €200 a week prior to the pandemic, then you would continue to get the full €350 a week. But if you had earned €199.99, well, then your payment was going to be reduced to just over €200. And the logic was is that if you were going to be receiving a reduced PUP payment, that this was now a two-tier thing, or that was on the basis that you weren't going to be losing out any money because the reduced level was still more than what you had been earning prior to the payment, which allowed the government to argue that it was continuing to have an inequality at the core of the policy.
Right.
So that was the argument. They were talking about a regrading was how it was expressed. But at the core of it, it was fair.
Okay, right. Well, I suppose if you had glimpsed the gay pari of the pandemic unemployment payment, it would be hard to stay down on the farm of job seekers allowance thereafter. But we'll see how that one works out politically, which
indeed,
I suppose, is a neat way of segueing into what was the opposition's reaction to all of today's announcements.
Well, I think that when it came to the opening up of the economy, there was a broad welcome. I think that would be the phrase that was used. I mean, people like Alan Kelly, the Labour leader, was pointed to the fact that he'd been calling for the number of phases to be reduced only on Thursday. Micheál Martin had said he'd sought clarity from the government, from business. They needed to know what was going on. He was saying that the headlines and the guidelines didn't marry anymore and there was confusion. And he felt broadly he got that. The Sinn Féin leader, as one would expect, picked up on the issue of the pandemic payments and expressing concern that no one should be left in a real bother as a result of what was happening from this virus, for which no one was to blame. And they had particular concerns when it came to the opening up of the economy on the question of whether or not there was going to be the testing regime in place. And they also had concerns about whether workers would be protected. They did welcome the fact that the Health and Safety Authority is going to be boosted by around 500 inspectors to ensure that new protocols are followed by business. But Sinn Féin wanted to know and ensure that workers would not be put at risk as Ireland opened up. So, you know, there were concerns being expressed by the opposition leaders, but at the same time, there was a broad welcome, and that would have included the Green Party leader, Eamon Ryan, as well.
Paul, in the history of politics, Donegal has always felt itself aggrieved through being neglected politically. But given how far you can drive around Donegal, could this be the first time in history that Donegal sees itself sitting atop the pecking order of the country?
Well, I think Donegal is one of those splendid counties. I have to declare an interest. Both my parents come from there. I've spent summers up there for decades, and it is just a wonderfully spectacular place. And sometimes people in Donegal do concede that the fact that it is cut off means that there's beautiful places to be able to be enjoyed by fewer people, and that's not such a bad thing. But absolutely, there would be a sense that this is a win for rural Ireland. So a minister, say like Michael Ring, who's been pushing for this, would also claim that places like Mayo would win, that you have had this urban outlook in the plan so far, that when you're increasing from 2 to 5 or 5 to 15 kilometres from your home, that's substantial in Dublin, Waterford, Cork, Limerick terms, but in the boonies and Donegal, it means absolutely nothing. So that this county opening up thing is really, really important, and no doubt Donegal would celebrate that too.
All right, thanks very much, Paul. Have a good weekend.
Pleasure, Colm, anytime. Look forward to talking to you next time.
Sweden's Foreign Minister Ann Linde spoke via a Zoom webinar to Dublin's Institute for International and European Affairs, and she was talking about the country's feminist foreign policy, multilateralism, the EU and more. And she, of course, spoke about the pandemic and her country's handling of it, and that's the area of her speech we're going to look at. Here's an extract and a couple of questions, including one of my own, which were emailed and put to her by the moderator of the discussion, Mary Cross.
I might as well start by addressing the debate whether or not Sweden is going against the grain when it comes to managing COVID-19. Well, we have the same strategic goals as every other country, and that is saving lives, slow down the outbreak, ensure that the Swedish healthcare system will cope with the extraordinary challenges, and mitigate the effects on business and jobs. Our strategy is based on social distancing, staying at home with even the slightest symptoms, and protecting older and other risk groups. This is done by a mixture of strong recommendations and legally binding measures. And people are following the recommendation to a high degree. They know this is not some kind of tip that you can follow if you want to or not. As one example, during Easter holiday, travels to the most popular vacation destinations went down with 96%. It's a fact that trade and our economy has been severely hit, and the unemployment numbers are worrying. So no, it's now not business as usual, and we are not casual about the pandemic. In Sweden, we have slightly different governmental structure with small ministries and large autonomous agencies dating back centuries. There luckily is a high degree of trust in the state, and the autonomous agencies and scientific advisors know this. We are used to listen to scientific advice from our expert authorities and mostly follow them. One reason is that corruption is very low. People rightly believe that recommendation is not because political or economic favors to give the advice. We do know that the virus is highly contagious and high quality healthcare helps. We do not know enough about mutations, immunity, second waves, and the long-term benefits of lockdowns or not lockdowns. In sum, we should all be humble to different national strategies and focus on cooperation.
I have some questions from the audience for you to consider. From a member of the IIEA board, Peter McClune has asked, and it's getting back to the domestic situation in Sweden, what was the response among the Swedish population to the chief epidemiologist's comments in recent days that there was potential for improvement in what we have done in Sweden And in hindsight, perhaps, would you consider, he might consider his approach to the pandemic?
Thank you very much. Well, there was some misunderstanding in the media, not at least in the international media, in the way that an academic is speaking compared to how we politicians is speaking. He was asked in a long interview if there was something that could be done differently. And he said, well, now we know so much more about the virus, so maybe it would have been possible to do something differently. But he was absolutely clear that the strategy we have was the one that he would have said we should follow. The fact that we did not close our schools up to secondary school, absolutely we should follow. What he said that we might maybe we should have started testing a little earlier, but in no way going in other ways when it comes to lockdowns and so on and so forth. And for an academician to say that if we have known before what we know now, we could have used some other measures, that's nothing strange with that. And both him and many of us were extremely surprised how this was received, because it was 100% not the intention of him. And he was very, very disappointed, which he clearly stated at his press conference. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Minister. I have another question from Colm O'Mungon from our Broadcasting Authority, and it comes back again. It's never far away, the COVID-19. It's a question again on the domestic situation. Could the Minister clarify if Sweden is pursuing a policy of herd immunity, as has been widely reported? And if so, given that it's no means clear that herd immunity for COVID-19 is possible, just to see what your view is in that area.
Thank you very much. Well, I guess I've done, well, maybe it's 50 or 60 international interviews, and in every single one of them, I have underlined, we have no strategy of herd immunity. And unfortunately, because President Trump said that we had herd immunity, it seems that it's extremely difficult to get this myth away. We don't have a strategy of herd immunity, but eventually we will get herd immunity, because that is what happens when you have a pandemic. And that is something that will happen sooner or later. And we will see, we don't know with this new virus when herd immunity will occur. But no herd immunity strategy in Sweden.
Now, finally today, these little people have kicked off the nearly 50 episodes we've done so far, and they've maintained their silence so far. So today, on our last daily episode, let's hear what the children, my children, who've been referenced numerous times, have to say about this pandemic. Which do you like better, school at home or school in school?
I like school at home, but I miss my friends from school.
School at home or school at school?
School at home.
You know, why do you like school at home better?
Because I get to spend time with my family, and my dog, and my baby sister. And stuff like that.
And what do you miss about school at school?
Friends, teachers.
Which do you prefer?
School at school. I don't see my friends and stuff. There isn't like a sports team to play for and stuff. It's probably not as tough on me as for maybe people who live like out in the country, because like they might be like only children and like school is where they see most of their friends, whereas I live in an estate and like I can still play with my friends.
And what do you think about things getting easier and being able to mix with more people? What are you most looking forward to when they start lifting the restrictions?
Football being back.
Well, I don't think the rugby will be back until after the football, because it's more physical than the football. So I'm a bit disappointed because of that. I'm happy that the hurling and Gaelic will be back.
What are you looking forward to?
Gaelic. Hurling.
I'm also looking forward to going swimming.
If they lift up the restrictions of swimming, I'll really be happy because we get to go back to swimming.
Did you smash anything when I was upstairs? No. Was it very annoying when I was upstairs?
Yes.
What about having to keep quiet?
Mom always went,
well, that was very hard.
Because, well, we couldn't really say anything because you were recording. You have to be, you must be as quiet as you can. Quiet as we can. Quiet as we can.
As quiet as we can.
Well, we were bursting out laughing. And you could probably hear it in the recording.
Annoying because I couldn't get clothes from my bedroom. You're recording in my bedroom.
I've got something to say to the microphone. Subscribe, please.
And that's all for this episode of Pandemic. We're back next week with more. In the meantime, do get in contact with suggestions or questions by email to colm.omongain@rte.ie. That's colm.omongain@rte.ie. Or you can contact me on Twitter @colmomongain. Do subscribe through your usual podcast platform to get this podcast regularly. Reviews are welcome. Nice reviews are even more welcome. Thanks for listening.